Welcome to the First Time Facilitator Podcast. Whether you're a first time facilitator or a seasoned pro, listen in for tips and tricks to make a bigger impact at the next workshop you deliver. And now, your host.
She's severely scared of undercooking chicken to the point of overcooking it.
Leanne Hughes.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Leanne Hughes, and I'm here to help you book out 5 more workshops for every workshop that you deliver. I've had a just really great week. I got my second Pfizer vaccine. Woohoo! Went on a mini staycation out about an hour west of Brisbane. Just really enjoyed the fresh air. It was lovely. We're into module 3 of the Booked Out Facilitator program, and I'm loving the crew and the ideas shared in that. Seeing the progress made is so, so rewarding. And it just reaffirms my belief in group experiences. Also, the corporate work is fun. Just a lot of really great variety in the gigs that I'm doing right now. So yeah, just having a nice time, and it's just positive to reflect on that. Last week, I spoke to Kate Pearden about how we can use our facilitation superpowers on ourselves. We have the ultimate skill set right in the work that we do. So why not only just use it on groups? So why not use that ultimate skill set on the work that we do in improving ourselves and improving our businesses and our ideas and getting things done? This week, I'm chatting to a facilitator who has been honing his craft and his career in facilitation for over the last 16 plus years. I don't know about you, but do you ever get bored using the same activities in your workshop? You want to create new things, new experiences? So today's guest, Truett Black, has worked as a trainer, speaker, and executive coach since 2005. And in this episode, he shares how he reinvigorates his approach and where he gets his new inspiration for new activities and just to keep his workshops fresh. As you can tell from this conversation, Truett loves this work. He grew up in the US and has lived in Greater China since 2001. Truett is based in Taipei and frequently consults, coaches, and facilitates workshops in Shanghai, Hong Kong, Singapore, and other cities in Asia. Having this background, I had to ask him how he creates wonderful, engaging conversations when he delivers sessions across Asia. And Truett shares some excellent practical strategies. If you find work over there, it's very helpful, this conversation. I wish I'd talked to Truett a few years ago for sure. Truett also trains and mentors internal trainers and freelance trainers, which is why he's the perfect guest for this podcast. In this conversation, he also shares self-talk and what he uses in terms of a mantra before he jumps into delivering a workshop. He also shares how he started and grew his business, even when some of those people closest to him had other thoughts and other advice for him. Truett's career in executive management began in the US, where he held positions with the Washington Post Group as area director, Enertron USA as global director of marketing and sales, and Revolution Tea as president. Truett's primary expertise is in leadership and team development, influence and communication, organizational development, and executive coaching. He's bilingual in Mandarin and English, holds a degree in Chinese language and literature, and a master of international management. He's also the father of 5 children, which makes it even more remarkable. If you enjoy this conversation, make sure that you reach out to Truett. I've got links to his LinkedIn profile, contact details, and website in the show notes for this one over at firsttimefacilitator.com/episode 184. And while you're there, you can find links to continue the conversation when the show is over in our free group called The Flipchart. Over 1,500 amazing people sharing ideas, questions, challenges about their workshops in that group. Also, a shout out to Gordon Rhodes. Hey, Gordon, thank you for the coffee, my friend. And you will make it to Fitzroy Island one day. You can also support the show and my coffee and ideation habit over at buymeacoffee.com/Leanne Hughes. Now, onto the show. I'm so excited to welcome onto the First Time Facilitator Podcast, Truett Black. Truett, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. And you can call me True.
Of course, us Aussies, we love shortening and anything. So that makes a lot of sense. Thanks, True. Now, True, I always love kickstarting these conversations. Facilitators on this podcast have come from so many different backgrounds and experiences. What's your story? How did you discover the world of facilitation and training?
Well, I got into it by knocking on 100 doors before one finally opened, or that's how it felt anyway.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, I come from a corporate background. I have an MBA. I led sales and marketing teams for most of my career in corporate. I enjoyed the energy around having a team trying to reach a goal. I enjoyed the creativity aspects of marketing. I liked having pressure and rising to the occasion. But around the age of 30 or so, and I'm fine to tell you how many years ago that was. It was about 21, 22 years ago.
Yeah.
I had always done some teaching, maybe at church or just in the community. At university, I'd done some teaching to help pay my way, grad school. I went and applied for a position as an adjunct faculty member in the local business college and got the job and just really fell in love. There was a different energy, right? There's a certain energy when you're in the office doing your work with your team. And then the energy I felt working in adult education told me basically what I needed to do with my future. Took me a long time, many sort of winding roads. And finally, I got into the world of corporate. I think I was about, oh gosh, and in it about 15 years now. So I must have been late 30s. Yeah.
Interesting. That must be a journey that happens to a lot of us around the age of 30, mid 30s, because I was the same sort of timeline as you in terms of knocking on those doors. So can you quickly just describe some of those opportunities where it's like there's 100 doors and you said it was a bit of a windy path to find your way there? Because I think a lot of people are in roles like operational roles. I was working in a marketing role previously and I thought I was like, it's huge risk to then jump over to the training side. How did you find your feet? Mine was an internal opportunity. What was your foot in the door?
Well, I learned from that experience of finally getting an opportunity that you have to tell everyone what you want to do once you figure out what you want to do. So you can relate, I'm sure. So for me, the winding road part of that was just figuring out what I really wanted to do, which ultimately was I wanted to be working with people in corporate or in any organization, really. And I wanted to help them with skill development, but also just with their personal growth in their effectiveness or their emotional intelligence. Or I had a particular affinity, and to this day, it's only gotten stronger, for working with leaders of all stages, you know, new leaders, mid-level, senior leaders. It's a tremendous joy for me. So part of it was just trying different things, different forms of adult education. If you can imagine, I've taught seminars on how to do well on the TOEFL reading section to 100 people in Chinese for 3 hours.
Wow.
No. So I tried a whole bunch of things. And I started telling people that I was working with what I thought I wanted to do. And then finally, a friend at Microsoft said, I know a guy in Shanghai who owns a big training company. Let me hook you up. And that's what got
the connection. And yeah. Microsoft, your eyes probably lit up. You're like, oh yeah, I've heard of them.
It was my friend at Microsoft, and he was a client. I was training him in certain things that were not really corporate training, but we kept getting into how to lead his team and how to solve, you know, coaching types of things. And he said, you really shouldn't be teaching me the other stuff you're teaching. You should be doing trainings for leadership and so forth. Yeah. And then he was the one who had the connection.
Yeah, it's interesting because Trey, you sound like someone, I mean, you've just said that you run all these different workshops and sessions. You could run a session on software versus sales marketing, but also the mindset and leadership work as well. Having that multi-potentialite sort of ability to do all sorts of things, has that helped or hindered you, do you think, in terms of building your business?
Well, it might be a product of my personality. And I think a lot of my friends who are in facilitation have a similar personality. We're explorers. We're curious. We love to go down the rabbit hole. And we may not come back to the original project plan.
Yes. I'm raising my hand, listeners. And you probably are too, if you're listening to this. You're like, yeah, we all resonate with that. How has it sort of served you?
Well, so the side to manage is that overly curious and, well, what about this? And that side of the personality is what you have to manage. You have to keep it, of course, because it allows you to become aware of really cool new things and open up to possibilities. But the thing to do really is to stay focused and keep trying. And really, I think I've heard you say, you just have to get in front of the group. You just have to get in and do it before you'll really know.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And pay attention to that reflection piece of like, okay, what part of that fueled me and what part of that didn't I like? And now, Trey, you do a lot of work now training other facilitators and trainers as well. For the end of the conversation, to ask what your advice is, but because you're so skilled and you do this work a lot, what kind of advice would you give to people that are new to running workshops and getting up in front of the group and finding their feet?
Sure. So I formally train internal trainers for our various clients. Those are always very rewarding experiences, and people come into it generally feeling nervous, the imposter syndrome that we talk about. weighs heavily. So there's that. And then, of course, as I've aged, junior freelance trainers and facilitators have approached me and said, I could use a mentor or I could use some advice. So I do both. I work with freelance trainers and facilitators as an informal mentor. And then as part of my work, we train internal trainers. So what advice? I think that no matter what I say, everyone has to first answer the question in their minds. And I think it's pretty much on every new facilitator's mind. And that is, am I any good? Are people going to like me? Am I going to be able to engage people? Am I going to be able to maintain my thoughts, stay clear-headed and be useful? So I think it's just the imposter syndrome. It's normal. So if somebody's really new to facilitation, I'll support them through that. And just say, you have to get in and be willing to make mistakes and be willing to fail. And the key really is to learn from that. And then once you've answered that question, that you're good enough, that you can perform pretty well in the role. Now, what should you be thinking about? Where do you put your focus? My basic answer to that is focus not on yourself, because that's your tendency. Now that you're good, now that you're getting the applause, now that you're getting the additional bookings and the higher fees and all that, it feels great. Don't give into that temptation to be focused on your own accolades or getting more and more. If you want to sustain your career as an internal trainer or as a freelancer, you have got to focus on the people in the room. And that's really about service. And I have all sorts of tricks of the trade that I'll share with them, like I'll suggest that before every session, they go somewhere and have a talk in their head and remind themselves. It's like a mantra. I do it to this day. Before every session that I do, every event, we set up, everything's ready, and then I disappear for 5 minutes. And I have this meditation and remind myself, hey, big guy, you're not here to make all these people like you. You're here to help these people have a great experience today. That's why you're here.
That is so good. I'm trying to think of mantras that I've used in the past. There's only one that I use. This is when I used to play netball, 15. We had the most annoying trainer. He used to make us do these sprints, but as we were doing it, we had to yell out the words fitter and stronger the whole time. And so my association with mantras is not a positive one because it reminds me of the pain and torture of that exercise. But we got fitter and stronger. And I really resonate with the 2 points you've made there in terms of the intro question. It's like, first, you've got to sell yourself that you are good enough. And so I do remember saying to myself in the early, taking that time out and saying, look, Leanne, you've got this. Mm-hmm. But I think it does have to graduate then onto something that, hey, okay, we know that you've got this. So now it's a case of what can you do? And that's why I was paused after you said that. Your mantra of you're in service to the group. Let's make this group experience the best that it can be. And switching that focus, it's really, that's super practical. I'm going to start using that one. And it's much easier now on Zoom calls, isn't it? Because you don't have to find a quiet space. So speaking of Zoom calls and virtual events, you've been in lockdown for a couple of months now. You live in Asia. Have you always lived in Taiwan?
Well, I've traveled all over the place and I've lived in Shanghai and Beijing for short periods, but I have primarily lived in Taiwan for about 21 years now.
Okay. Well, I've been to Asia quite a few times running workshops and I'm so curious around what it takes. Let's talk about the cross-cultural aspects of running workshops because being an Australian facilitator, you facilitated for an Australian group, it's pretty easy to get people to start talking. Whereas when I went to Hong Kong for the first time and ran my first workshop, I noticed that my style really had to change. Can you share with our listeners what you've learned in your experience running workshops across Asia, what you've had to change as well?
Sure. There is this general sense, and you hear it a lot from trainers that are coming into Asia from non-Asian countries, that participants in Asian countries, they are shy. They're reluctant to speak. They don't talk much. They don't speak out. They don't share their opinion. You hear all these sorts of things. It's a myth. It's absolutely a myth. The truth is that people flying in from Western countries to work with audiences in Asia, they don't know enough about the local audience to figure out how to get them to open up. Any facilitator worth her salt in this region will be conducting extremely lively workshops. I mean, to the point where you can't get people to shut up. They're so talkative. Yeah. But you have to know how to do it, right? It's unlocking the code. It's the secret code. So a couple of ideas for people. If you're going to deliver a workshop in an Asian country, you have to do your homework. Get a copy of Aaron Meyer's Culture Map. and read up on some of the underlying differences and values and things in that country. I think you definitely will need a local cultural, whether it's an HR counterpart or someone in the workshop or a few people in the workshop, you've got to talk to them about their life and see if you can understand a little bit about the way that they are accustomed to learning as a group. So you have to do that kind of homework. Language is a big issue, actually. Yeah. There's a huge preference, right, for us if you're training in Thailand for someone who can deliver in Thai, or if you're in Korea. And I recommend, if you have the resources and you have that flexibility, that facilitators get someone who can speak local language to support the event or the workshop. It'll make things 100% smoother. And then if people are doing role plays or talking deeply, it's so much easier to do that in their native language, even if they're quite good at English. So you really want to have some, you know, a local partner, a local co-facilitator who can help you with the language aspects. And then maybe some tips. Would some tips help?
Love like some how tips.
To, yes. How to get people, you know, how to get yeah. people warmed up and unable to shut up. Most of my experience is in the Chinese diaspora. So it's Taiwan, Hong Kong. And I do quite a bit of work in Singapore. I've been to Malaysia many times, Japan, Korea, et cetera, but mainly with Chinese speakers. So most of my experience is with them. One of the things you got to do early is set up a smaller group activity to get them warmed up. So they're not like Western audiences. Like as soon as you ask the first question to a Western audience, people are unafraid to speak in front of the group. But for almost everyone in Asia, the way they grew up is if the teacher asked them a question and they gave the wrong answer in front of the group, they were shamed by that teacher. So that's a shadow that remains with them. And so all you have to do, it's very simple. You start with like a simultaneous survey and just get them standing up and walking around and having, you know, one-to-one or two-on-two conversations. And that will warm them up. You can come in with a killer experiential activity at the beginning. That's okay, team one, team two, team three, et cetera, and get them really fascinated by that exercise, but in smaller groups. And then in my experience, if you've got local language capability or a partner who can do it, and you start that way, pretty much that first debrief, you can do it as a group and you will get people speaking in front of the group because they're warmed up.
Yeah. I absolutely found that. That was the reason after that first sort of Hong Kong session, I was like, okay, it's what I've been doing because of COVID in terms of just reimagining what it would look like. I had to reimagine this whole session from a Western audience to that. And it really began with like making sure that I was getting voices, that they were using their voice in sort of the first 5 minutes. And then it was really interesting. Yeah, true. Exactly. So they had that. And then we did like a bit of a debrief, went to each sort of pair and people were actually speaking up, and that created this really great environment, just good platform to leap from, as opposed to just that general, what does everyone think? And no one talks up.
They're thinking they're just not going to take that risk.
Yeah. And you could even say, like, I was even remembering using words like there is no wrong answer and like really doing that, but it didn't matter. I couldn't wind back that conditioning in that moment.
Absolutely. There's also this ingrained belief that you are, even though we know that we're there to facilitate a learning experience. And facilitating a learning experience, I tell the people I mentor and train, is it's all about digging out the gold that is already within people, right?
Yeah.
And people have that wisdom. People, through your learning activities and your learning experience, they are, we're bringing that out, but also helping them to think more deeply about it, to sharpen it or whatever. So people in Asian countries, they have all that too, but they won't show that in front of you, the facilitator, because the ingrained belief is that you are the teacher knows everything. The teacher is the one who says right or wrong. So for me, even as a very experienced leader in an organization with global experience, I still have this sense that if I speak up too early, I might threaten the teacher or make the teacher lose face.
Oh, wow. So out of a lot of respect, Ben.
It's a great intention, right? So all you have to do is get them into something fascinating, preferably small group. And then within 30, 45 minutes, they're going to figure out that they can talk openly with you.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it's all like, it's the sort of foundational principles, right, of great facilitated workshops and hearing voices from all, from every person in the room, but it's just applying it a little bit different and just being aware of it, as you said. Now, True, you've been facilitating for some time. You gave away your age on the show. It was That's fine. Like, I'm 38 this year. I'll be honest and transparent. You've got a few more years on me. I'd love to know, and this is like a personal probably bias that I have, but it's funny when I run workshops, let's say I've been doing an activity, I know it works, and I'm working with a new client. For some reason, I still think like I need to reinvent it, even though they've never seen it before. It's just that I've run it like 18 times. So I'm personally bored of it. Mm-hmm. But let's flip that over to the other side where you might have a long-term client that you've worked with for 5 or 10 years and you're coming back and you know that you need to bring something new. Mm-hmm. What do you do? Like, how do you prepare for that sort of, how do you bring the novelty and flavor and re-inject it into your work?
Yeah, it can be a headache, right? It's like they've seen all your amazing, your best stuff.
Tricks, yeah.
And you have to, if you're good at design and you've got good stuff in place already, there's been lots and lots of, wow, that was life-changing. There are things like this that happen. So yeah, when you're on year 5 or year 7, how do you, you know, continue to bring the life-changing, the wow-inducing stuff? Oh, lots of ways going on. Interesting, quirky, fun, and practical certifications is a way to mine a lot of different things, new things that you can bring in. Like a year and a half ago, my wife and I went to Bali for 4 days and attended a workshop on embodied coaching, systemic coaching, and constellations. And I'd never heard of any of this stuff before.
Kirsty from the School of Facilitation brought it up a while ago. But yeah, tell us more about that.
Well, it's the basic idea is that we have sources of information coming from different parts of us. So we have intellect, we've studied stuff, we've learned stuff. We have our rational brains. We also have our emotions are a source of information, right? If you're feeling bad, that's telling you something. And then there's intuition or spirit, depending on your beliefs. And then there's the body. The body tells us stuff. The body provides information. And I have to tell you, the first time I heard this on the first day and people are sitting there saying that, well, my feet right now are telling me that I'm whatever. I had to really suspend disbelief, right? Went back that night as typical. Yeah. Went back and I Googled stuff for about 2 hours trying to figure out if this is legitimate or if it's
funny. This is like while you're in Bali, you're Googling to see whether it's legit. Yeah. Love it. Yeah.
It's a bunch of hope.
You've already committed. Yeah.
And my wife's sort of looking at me like, what did you get me into here? You know, I'm supposed to talk about how my shoulders feel. What am I supposed to feel? Yeah. But no, it's legitimate. If you just look up somatics, somatics, yeah, you'll find that they're using these techniques in militaries all over the world. So yeah, I mean, they're not going to be using hippy dippy stuff there. They're using it in coaching more and more now. Systemic coaching is really on the rise, and that's all related to it. Looking at systems is one thing, but it's generally also combined with this embodied stuff, thinking about the body and getting information from the body. So yeah, I mean, just learning that allowed me to create all sorts of new activities that I'd never thought of before. Like you're talking about with a group about how to network more effectively. I can use some of the things I learned from constellations to have them think deeply and examine their current relationships and how they can improve those relationships. And I'll actually have them moving around and I'll use little floor markers and stuff like that. I adapted it all from the workshop.
Yeah, you know? Nice.
So there's that.
I was going to add, so what I'm hearing from you is it's your sort of professional development, personal development as well. You're trying to keep current, seeing what's out there, and then incorporating that back into your work for that currency.
Yeah, there's lots of wins involved in that, right? It's you're getting out and meeting people, first of all, because I made, you know, by the end, we were all hugging each other. We were lifelong friends. And my wife was saying, when are we going to do the next one?
That was last January, was it?
It was like a year. Yeah, it was just before all the stuff hit the fan, right? Yeah. And of course, she was more popular than me. That happens every time but with the group. But what was I going to say? No, there's meeting the people, but also learning for you. And that's part of the advice I give to newer facilitators, internal or external. You've got to keep learning. You can't think you're good enough. You're never finished, right?
Yeah.
The Chinese have a phrase, I'll say it in Chinese for any Chinese speaking listeners. It's called 活到老学到老. And the idea is you live a long time, you never stop learning. Mm. That's the saying.
Yeah, so that's beautiful.
So there's that. And then, and then it gives you these ideas for what you can, things you can bring into your trainings, your workshops. It also helps you think of ways to improve existing stuff. Like you said, I'm like you, I never stop tweaking it. Yeah, and I know I'm talking a lot, but I don't want to forget to mention the number one source of new ideas and new activities. So going on trainings is brilliant and great, and everyone should keep doing it and do some funky ones. Like that one was a recommendation from a mentor.
Yeah, that's cool. Any excuse to get to Bali, right? That's awesome.
Oh, that was good too. Yeah. I mean, you have to have a mentor, right? Or several mentors, and ask them what you should learn. But back to activity design, training design. Okay. Number one source, peers. Mm-hmm. Friends in the business. It's just basic Robert Cialdini reciprocation. You're willing to share, people will share with you. So all kinds of new stuff. It's just like a regular practice for me to go to my groups that I belong to, of trainer networks. Mm-hmm. And I'm a member of yours now. It's great. It's just, you can see it there too, right?
Yeah.
Like somebody says, I need an activity for this, or I need a whole design for a work. How do I do it? And then there's great ideas flowing.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned that it's based on the whole reciprocity thing as well, because I think everyone gains as a result from sharing that. I know people can be protective of their ideas and their activities, but I mean, me personally, I just love sharing whatever I'm working on this podcast, because then hopefully someone can then learn off it or spin it, create something new. And I'm not any poorer as a result. We all are just building up this brand of workshops, and it has a massive knock-on effect right around the world if everyone's just open and free with their ideas. So I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, the flip chart's awesome. Of course, I'm very biased. They're a great group.
No, it's really very friendly. I mean, trainers want to help other people. I mean, we eat that stuff up, right? Somebody puts a question out there, I need some help. And most facilitators already have a deep service mentality and want to be helpful to people. Yeah. And then, your group I've been a member about 6 months. I've been very impressed with the vibe. There's no biting at each other back and forth. It's very friendly and supportive and smart. Yeah.
Excellent.
I just do that. And then you have to, if you're doing like a new experiential and it's longer, those can go awry very easily if you haven't thoroughly tested them. So, I mean, we love to bring experiential activities into our sessions. We think that they create emotional experiences and people remember them because there's emotion, and they allow for very deep learning as long as you have a great debrief on the back, right? Great reflection on the back. So what I'll do is we'll develop an activity here, and then we'll test it here with our team. So we have a boutique consultancy here called True Development, and we have a staff, we have a team, and we'll test it. But very often at various stages in that development and testing process, I will go to my network and say, what do you think of this? How does this sound to you? I feel like something's missing. What's missing? And I always get great feedback from my network.
Mm-mm. And you're creating these experiences like just from ideas that you have with your team, and then you're going out and saying like, can you critique this? What am I missing?
The team's really direct with me. I love it. They're like,
that's great. Yeah.
Sucks, boring. It's stupid. Yeah. Or I guess one out of three times I'll hear, this is really good.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. And then usually if they say it sucks or whatever, I'll say, okay, is there any way to fix it? Is there any way to change it? And then they'll very often have creative ideas around how to tweak it. But I just, all through that process, even just with idea generation, like coming up with some new stuff that we can test here, I'll go to my network. And they'll very often, because they're in the same boat, right? They're all out there trying to find cool new stuff.
Yeah. I was just going to say, it's scary when you have this idea for an activity and you've written it down and you craft it and you're on your own, like you're that's the solopreneur, and you might not have time to put it out to your network. So you go into the workshop and you think, oh gosh, I hope this works. And then sometimes you find that in the moment you're having to tweak things to actually happen. But so it is actually nice that you're testing it before you get in there, because that would obviously give you a bit more confidence. Probably something I need to do. So thanks for that tip as well. Now, True, we've talked a lot about the craft of facilitation here. I'm also curious, because you have a boutique training company, about how you've built that up and how, I mean, you said that you got a sales and marketing background. Have you been leaning that on that for your business development? What has worked for you in terms of growing your business and making like a real go at this in terms of your career?
Well, yeah, we started True Development in 2013. And the origin story is that I was a freelancer flying all over the area. Because I'm fluent in Mandarin, there was lots of work. And then training is huge in China. So there was massive demand. I was on the plane all the time. I stayed living in Taiwan because my family is Taiwanese here. But I was on the plane all the time. And finally, my wife said, you keep taking the materials that the global training companies are giving you and fixing those materials. Like they weren't user-friendly. They weren't participant-friendly. Lots of lecture. And varying degrees of awful, but with a few nice ones.
You know, hopefully they're not listening. Yeah, okay.
I hope nobody that I work for is listening to this. Now they knew I was making it work. That's, they kept hiring me, I think, because of that. But my wife said, I'm tired of seeing you spend all this time fixing that stuff for other people. Why don't you do it yourself?
Yeah.
Really? Like, of course, it's my dream. It's like the thing I really want to do, but I'm a family first kind of person. And I was thinking about the kids, and we have 5 kids.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So security would have been a big, like, number one for you.
Yeah. So that was a big risk. And long story short, she rented me an office and, you know, started managing things. She's a much better manager than I am, my wife. I hired a couple of people to help me out, someone in sales, someone in, you know, office admin. And we started going. And then you have this, I care an awful lot about behaving in an ethical way, behaving with integrity. It's really just about feeling okay about myself more than anything. But there's also a reputational risk. If you do stuff like go to companies that you've trained at before under someone else's banner,
yes,
and say, hey, I have my own company now, I can serve you directly, that's just horrible. And I refuse to do it.
Yeah.
So we had these rules and we started from very little. And all of my friends who understood a little bit about training in Taiwan said, you're crazy. Taiwan is a shrinking market for training. It's getting harder and harder to get work here. Are you okay? You know, like, are you insane kind of thing?
Gosh.
One of my dearest friends is a retired McKinsey consultant. He said, I think you'll fail. I'm sorry, but.
Oh my goodness. That would have really had an impact on me if I'd heard that. How did you feel?
Well, maybe they just know me well. Because when I hear that, I say, oh yeah. Well, see, I'm a gentle soul, but boy, the way to get my dander up is to tell me I can't do something.
Mm-hmm.
Or to tell me that I'm going to get snowed under or squashed or whatever, I'll fight. And so we did. We fought. And my experience with running a boutique firm, a consultancy, is the first couple of years, you say you have a strategy. Like, we had a strategy. You know, I had mission, vision, values from the start, and also our strategic goals and all that. But you're still figuring out who you are and what you want to do, you know, for the first couple of years.
Oh, absolutely. So when you were starting out, were you sort of just saying yes to anything just to get the cash flow, the business, test it out? Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you're not very selective at all. But we sort of the core values we had were things like, I told everybody, we don't have to be super amazing in every way. We just have to be 10 to 20% better than what these clients can find.
That's good.
In every way, like the way we answer the phone has to be 10% better.
Yes.
The way we design our stuff has to be 10 to 20% better. Our workbooks and stuff have to look better than what they normally get. And the workshops themselves, like from beginning to end, the whole customer experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that you're mapping out those touch points. I think it's a huge way to differentiate how you actually even engage with the company is the opportunity.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's 10 to 20% better is what we shot for. And then my wife's on board with that. She's really into doing things right, doing things well. And so together with our great team, we established a reputation. And so after a couple of years, we had a lot of work coming in.
Amazing.
And it was wonderful. It's wonderful to have that happen. Yeah. And then we moved to our current building. I'm not going to take the camera off and show you, but it's, if you're ever in Taiwan, come stop by.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'd love to go. I've got a few more friends, facilitator friends over there now. So I'll definitely have to hop on over.
Party at True Development. Yeah.
Thank you. We'll just run a workshop together. But just in closing, you've also written a book, Training Zen. I just wanted to share that with listeners. Did you want to give listeners a bit of a insight into what you wrote about, who it's for? And we can pop a link to that in the show notes as well if people are interested in finding out or reading the book.
Thank you. Well, it's not published yet. It's in final editing phase, which can be 6 months or a year or 5 years. My target is to have the book out by this fall. I'm going to self-publish. We'll have it out. And yeah, we'll put the website into the show notes. Thank you. Well, I'll provide that. The book basically, it came to fruition because people I mentor said, could you just write down some of the things you're talking to me? 10 pages is fine. And then, of course, 10 pages becomes 20 pages. And like, oh, there's this idea too. And then I bought Scrivener, the software
app. I've heard everyone keeps talking about that app. Yes.
Yeah, you're about to embark on your book writing, right?
Yeah, but this is about you, true. So let's, okay. I don't have much to add. I think your story would be more interesting than where I am.
Okay, well, yeah, quickly expanded to, I've got about 35,000 words post-edit. So yeah, it's Training Zen is basically, it's a manual for people who want to build a sustainable career as a facilitator in the corporate training world. Perfect. So it'll either be for internal trainers or for external freelancers. And yeah, it's really, I'm trying to put in stuff about skills, but it's practical philosophy is what it is. It's like how to get this stuff right. And the people I mentor said, I've never thought about things the way that you talk about them. So I think you have something to share. Please share it. And after I said no 10 or 20 times, I finally put up the white flag.
Yeah, 35,000 words. That's an impressive effort. And it sounds really intriguing. So please, when it is out, let us know. Let us know on the flip chart. We'll spread the word for sure. True, is there anything else you'd like to share with listeners before I have to say thank you and say goodbye, which I don't want to do, but is there anything else you'd like to share with our group of first-time facilitators? Also keeping in mind that a lot of them listening are probably graduated past that stage as well.
They're very experienced, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'd love to learn from any of them who are interested in connecting. I really think that it takes a village. And when you're a solopreneur or you're in a small firm like I am, you have to have strong relationships. You have to have a good network and, you know, and really help each other through all of this. And earlier when you were talking, I was thinking she has the abundance mentality. You're talking about sharing your resources. Yeah, that's the abundance mentality. And I'm very much the same way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I welcome anyone to, if you'd like to connect, to reach out. And there was one thing about what advice do I give to newer trainers, and I didn't get to it. And that is learn about adult education, because it's shocking how many people get into facilitation and they don't know these basic things like the Kolb experiential learning cycle, or they don't know about vertical development, or they don't know the tenets of adult education. Mm-hmm. Even people who have been facilitators for 10 years, I'll mention things like this, and they go back, they'll go and look it up. They've never heard of it before. So yeah, I would say, in addition to all the other things we do with design and client care and communication and marketing and sales, and all these things you have to do, give yourself that leg up and make sure you're doing it right by having that reference, knowing what adult education really is and how that informs everything you do.
Yeah, thank you. I know what you mean. It was also an assumption of mine that everyone knew about this stuff as well. And I was very lucky. One of my first roles was working for Accenture in instructional design. And they just put us through all these, like, yes, we learned that when I was really young in my career. So I just, again, that assumption, curse of knowledge. You just think that, oh, everyone's had this experience. And because it is, it's so fundamental to workshop design and thinking how you manage groups and the content that you share as well. True, it's been a delight to talk to you and connect with you. We've been chatting asynchronously, so it feels like what a novelty to talk live. If listeners would like to reach out to you, where can they find you?
Okay, so LinkedIn, it's easy, and it's under Truett Black. And then my email, I guess we can put it in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely.
My email is just true@true-development.com. So welcome anybody to reach out, and we'll put a few more links maybe in the notes.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for being on the show, True, and for just, you've handled a lot of like wide ranging questions from like cultural competency to building a business. It's been wonderful connecting with you here. Thanks again.
It really was my pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much for sticking around. You've reached the end of another episode of the First Time Facilitator podcast. Connect with the show at firsttimefacilitator.com. or follow me on Instagram at Leanne Hughes to find out what I'm up to during the week. If you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to share it with someone who will also appreciate the insight. And make it easier for yourself and subscribe to the show in your podcast player of choice. Thank you so much for listening, and chat to you next week.